Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a very, very interesting Wednesday live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and right here on FS1. It's great to have you in today. My favorite list every year. Mike Sando comes out with his four quarterback tiers. I'm totally into it. It's the most accurate. We'll address that today. We got stuff happening in Green Bay. Joy Taylor is joining me this morning. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. There sure is some stuff happening in Green Bay.
So, we've talked about this. Generally, the way it works is if an NBA star says, I want out, you move him. The faster you can move a star in any sport, the more you get in return. Years and years ago, long before 99% of you started following sports, in the early 70s, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, at the time Lew Alcindor, told Milwaukee, I want out. But it wasn't public. You didn't have the internet. You didn't have all the NBA sites. And because of that, they worked to get a haul, the greatest haul a team's ever gotten back for a star player. So the reality is, when somebody wants out, your best move is quick, because you'll lose leverage over time. Everybody in the league knows, oh, this guy wants out, we don't have to give you much. So when Aaron Rodgers was unhappy, I thought there was an argument to be made if Jordan Love can play, and you drafted him in the first round, he should be able to play, unless you screwed up your scouting and, you know, that would be a Packer issue. Jordan Love should be able to play by this time, a year later, right? By this time in Lamar Jackson's career, it was MVP talk, right? So, interesting. This morning, the Packers look like they're going to trade back to get Randall Cobb. They're going to go get Randall Cobb. I had a general manager and a scout text me this morning. This is why Aaron Rodgers is not a personnel guy. He's a quarterback. Randall Cobb is expensive, old, shot, injured, can't stay healthy. And you drafted a slot receiver named Amari Rodgers out of Clemson, who is a slot and will be very good. Hopefully Aaron can suck it up and work with a rookie and build a relationship, even though it's his last year. But this is a classic example. Now this relationship with Aaron in Green Bay is officially weird. This is a really bad personnel move. He's $10.4 million. That is a ton for a slot receiver who was a one-time Pro Bowler 7 years ago and since then can't stay healthy. 14 games missed last 3 years, hamstring issues, toe issues. Nice player at one point, but can't play anymore. I mean, like, it's not going to be a $10 million player. And this is a classic example. If your wife comes up to you and says, I want a divorce, you can say, let's make it work for a year to a year and a half. You're going to have resentment issues. You're going to have trust issues. And you're going to start doing things to appease her that are inauthentic. It's not a real relationship. You're going to act completely differently than you normally would in a really healthy, authentic relationship. What Green Bay is doing now, they're in the makeup stage. So they're making a really bad move, according to what I'm reading this morning, to appease Aaron Rodgers, who's got 1 year left, may not care about building some great relationship with a rookie slot receiver named Amari Rodgers from Clemson, who actually can play, who can really play. He'll be in fact, his comp was Randall Cobb. That's who people thought he was out of Clemson. He's Randall Cobb. So this is officially the weird stage. That Aaron Rodgers, because Green Bay feels, we kind of butchered that whole thing and we got to make up, bad move. Now, some of you could say, well, Brady went out and got Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown is essentially free. They pay him nothing. And he can still beat people down the field. Antonio Brown can play. He's got his issues. Dude can play and he's free. What about Gronk? Still an elite blocking tight end. I mean, last two years, that Gronk has played, he's made huge plays in big games. Super Bowls, AFC Championship, NFC Championship. Gronk can still play, not as often and not with the volume he once did, but Gronk can still play. Antonio Brown can still play. It's a discount for both. Randall Cobb can't, and he's expensive. It's a kind of a prime example of the relationship is in a weird space, and Green Bay now is sacrificing cap and quality to appease the guy that wants out. Aaron wanted out. That's why there's an argument to be made. Guy wants out. Let him go. Move fast. So that story is coupled with this story. Now, this is really interesting. So what do the Packers need in the NFC? Now, think about the NFC. Seattle's got DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. The Rams, Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, endless wide receiver talent. Tampa Bay, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Antonio Brown. When you look around the NFC, the Dallas Cowboys, CeeDee Lamb, Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup. When you look around the NFC, it is teams with really good wide receivers. And what really truly lost that game for Green Bay against Tampa? Kevin King, the corner, got smoked right before half. The Packers desperately need another corner. They have Jaire Alexander, but in the NFC, I mean, go think of the last four teams left. It's a passing league. The last four teams left last year. Buffalo, Stephon Diggs, Cole Beasley. Kansas City, name your star. Tampa, receivers everywhere. Green Bay, Devontae Adams on a tight end with 11 touchdowns. The last four teams, it's a passing league. The one thing all of them had, great, great wide receiver, tight end, even running back talent. That's the league now. So for Green Bay, in a weird relationship with their quarterback, to get through the NFC, they could really use another corner. Because they don't have the wide receivers to get in a shootout with Tampa. I don't think they have the wide receiver talent to get in a shootout with Seattle or Los Angeles. They need another corner. And look at this story this morning. Dolphins corner Xavien Howard wants out of Miami. He is the best corner in the NFL. Do not listen to anybody that says Jalen Ramsey. I watched every snap of Jalen Ramsey last year. He's not as good as Xavien Howard. Dolphins led the NFL with 18 picks, 10 from this guy. He led the NFL in pass defended. He led the NFL in picks. He is the best corner in the NFL. Smart, disciplined, great hands, catching radius. He's fantastic. You put him next to Jaire Alexander, you have the best cornerback tandem not only in the NFL, but in the NFL for a decade. And he's $15 million. You're paying $10 for Randall Cobb. Prime example. This is what Green Bay needs. Because Green Bay can't go toe-to-toe with Tampa Bay offensively. Tampa's corners are okay. If Green Bay got Xavien Howard, now you take Mike Evans out of the game. Now you take Chris Godwin. Now you got yourself a fighting chance against Tampa. You have evened the playing field, and you could make it. But you spent $10 million on Randall Cobb, potentially, and you also butchered the 2020 draft. Remember, you went and got a quarterback, and then a power running back, and then a blocking tight end. Had you gone out and stopped worrying about development and gotten pieces, you'd have something to give Miami. So this is a prime example. Players should be players. That doesn't mean you can't listen to Brady. Brady went and said, hey, get me Gronk. He's a great blocking tight end. He'll spread the gospel. We've got a pandemic. We don't have a preseason. We don't have camps. I would love to have a guy to spread the gospel. Tough guy, blocking tight end. We're not sure about this offensive line in Tampa right now. Gronk made sense to Tampa. Absolutely. When he came in, I said, it makes sense. Spread the gospel. The offensive line before last year for Tampa was the number one area of concern. They draft Tristan Wirfs. They get Gronk, solidifies their blocking. And by the end of the year, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, Tampa's O-line was actually really good. It was a really good O-line. So all very, very interesting. You know, we spent hours talking about marginal NBA player trades. Got the best corner in the NFL. Every team in the NFL needs a great corner. He is out there. Go make a trade. This kid is an unbelievable talent. He is an unbelievable talent. And that's why, I'll go back to the beginning. That is why when stars want out, because stars tend to control a locker room, NBA, NFL, baseball, more than other players, right? They're more respected. They've got a larger voice. When a star wants out, don't tell anybody. Start making calls and move them. Because now you got Green Bay, according to the Randall Cobb story, that would be a terrible move by Green Bay. Nobody, the Green Bay Packers are not good enough to overspend for a slot corner or a slot receiver, who, by the way, is not as good as the rookie slot receiver they just drafted. That kid can play. The Herd brought to you by Jersey Mike's. Be a sub above. I'm going to get to the Mike Sando list. Giannis dropping a little shade on IG. That's called Instagram. And we got a lot of stuff today. Good show. All fired up. Mike Sando, Eric Mangini stops by as well. Laker rumors, too. Laker rumors on Kyle Kuzma. Apparently, they're making calls.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
With Marcus by Goldman Sachs. Get a personal loan with a fixed rate, no fees ever. Go to Marcus.com. Learn about their no-fee personal loans. Great to have you in. So every year it comes out once. I think it is the definitive ranking of NFL quarterbacks. And I try to stay away. I used to do it more from ranking all these quarterbacks. So Mike Sando, this is a real list. 11 coordinators, 15 executives, a dozen GMs, head coaches. This is a grown-up list. This is not Twitter opinion. These are people with jobs. And like people that do this for a living get paid a lot of money to grade quarterbacks. Their entire careers are getting the quarterback right. And Mike Sando, who will be on in about an hour and a half, he does a great job on this. It's the one list every year. I have very few arguments with it every year. It's the most accurate by far list. And the quarterbacks are ranked in four tiers. And so this is how Mike Sando, when he goes to the GMs and the executives, here's how he states it. Tier one, you carry your team every week. That's how good of a quarterback you are. Tier two, you carry your team, but not as consistently. Tier three, you're a franchise quarterback, but you need a lot of help. It just screams Kirk Cousins. And tier four, you know, there's something there. You may just be a career backup. You're on the clock, definitely. Or you're old. So I look at it differently. If I was a GM, tier one is I don't have to ever worry about the position. Tier two is I would take phone calls on my quarterback. Tier three, I would make phone calls to replace my quarterback. And tier four, I got a major problem at quarterback. So here is the list. Now, the two things I'll tell you about this list. You got to have a tier one or two quarterback to win a Super Bowl. That's the first rule with this thing. The second rule is all the fans whose quarterback is in tier three think this thing stinks. So here's the list by real people that have real jobs. Tier one is Aaron Rodgers, Mahomes, Brady, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson. My only disagreement with that, I would have Josh Allen in that group. I think he's a bigger, stronger player than Deshaun Watson, throws a better football, less baggage, and with no running game, got his team to the AFC Championship. Last year, Deshaun Watson's 4-12. So I would put Josh Allen in that group, but he graded as the top quarterback in tier two. So they probably missed by a couple of votes. Tier two is Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Matt Stafford, Dak Prescott, Justin Herbert, Matt Ryan, Kyler Murray, Ryan Tannehill, Joe Burrow. My only disagreement with that, I would have Derek Carr in that list at the very bottom. Well, what do you know? Tier three, the first quarterback grading out is Derek Carr. Into Ben, into Baker Mayfield, Kirk Cousins, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, Garoppolo, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Daniel Jones. I don't really have a problem with that. Again, I'd put Derek at the end of tier two. He was probably close. I do think Carson Wentz has tier two talent, but you can't put him in tier two off of his year last year. By the way, Baker and Kirk Cousins, that's exactly where they should be. Baker and Kirk Cousins need a lot of help. Neither has a dynamic athletic trait. neither has a huge arm, neither's a great athlete, neither has ideal size. Sorry, that's where Baker is. He's got the best offensive line in football and the best running game. If he didn't, he'd be running around and he'd be in tier four. Tier four, Sam Darnold is the first player listed. Then it's Jameis, Bridgewater, Cam, Dalton, Tua, Jalen Hurts, Drew Lock, Tyrod Taylor, Taysom Hill, Joe Flacco. Again, do I think Darnold moves himself into tier three this year? Yes. Do I think Derek Carr plays his way into tier two potentially this year? Yes. By and large, I don't have any major disagreements with it. I just think, you know, the guys I think are a little better all ended up as the number one quarterback in the next tier. I think Josh Allen is a little better than people think. I think Derek Carr and Sam Darnold also a little better than people think. But I could be wrong. These guys are pros. This is what they do for a living. It's fun. This is what I believe the most accurate list of quarterback talent every year by Mike Sando, who joins us later. Executives, it can be an anonymous poll. You're not going to be shouted out. You don't have to be held. I know nobody likes anonymous sourcing, but you get your best information. I do, from people who don't want to be out there. I got two executives this morning ripping the Packers Randall Cobb move. They're not doing that if you have to put their name on it. And the bottom line is, you want information, I want to give it to you. So I love this list. I think it's great. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, Simone Biles has decided to withdraw from the individual all-around gymnastics final to continue to focus on her mental health. U.S. Gymnastics made the announcement and said they were fully supportive of her and her decision to prioritize her well-being. She will continue to be evaluated daily to determine whether she will compete in the individual event finals next week. So we have a bit of an update on her situation in Tokyo.
You know, it was interesting. I saw a story this morning where she lost confidence in the middle of her jump. She got up there and just lost her way.
Mm-hmm.
It's fascinating. Like, that'd be a middle of a play for a quarterback running around, and you're like, I've lost. You know, by the way, Carson Wentz, they call it in golf, yips. Carson, yep. Wentz got the yips. Last year, Carson Wentz went totally sideways, and I love Carson. Could not. Remedial screen passes were a major, major problem.
What, weren't we talking about this with Sam Darnold seeing ghosts?
Yeah, like it's this. You know, it's funny. I stayed mostly off social media yesterday. I'm sure
that was a good choice.
Yeah, it was a barnyard musical. But what's funny is a lot of these alpha males telling you, oh, I mean, can you imagine? I can give you Aaron Rodgers, Dak Prescott, Carson Wentz, Sam Darnold. Notable players.
LeBron James
literally melting down and saying, I got to give myself a break. We have no idea. Remember, Michael Jordan didn't have to deal with Twitter. Okay, Adam Silver's come out, the commissioner of basketball, and said, my players are miserable. So this idea that, well, you know, she is too much for, it's like, no. The NBA commissioner is like, my players are miserable. I've seen KD meltdown. I've seen LeBron meltdown. Folks, we are putting so much, she's 24 years old, we're putting so much pressure on these kids, and they've always had pressure. I'll give you a story. So I went skiing a couple years ago, and I go into the little area to get lunch, and I sit down next to the athletic director, I didn't know him, for Columbia University, right. Great school in New York, Ivy League. And I said, what is your number one issue with student athletes? He goes, mental health. He goes, Northeast parents put so much pressure on their kids academically. And then they come to school and we ask them to be great athletes. He goes, we have psychologists all over the university. What we are demanding from 19, 20-year-old kids is outrageous as adults. He goes, these kids, and this is Columbia, this is Ivy League, this is who we think in America are the winners. These are the winners. He says, our kids are melting down. We put so much academic and sports pressure on them, they can't be kids anymore. They can't go to just have fun and screw off and make big mistakes like kids do.
Look, I understand there's an old school mentality that you just got to push through and you got to tough it out and therapists are off hoax and California nonsense and all of that. And if that's how you feel, good for you.
Yeah.
But as usual in life, we are apt to evolve. And we've arrived at a place where we can finally start openly talking about the mental side of not only just sports, but life. And I really think we should stop calling it mental health, because then that gives everyone this trigger to the stigma that's like, ooh, somebody's not okay, and you're gonna have a meltdown, and you're crazy. And it's like, no, your brain is a part of your body. It's inside your body. My brain is telling my hands to move like this. It tells my muscles where to go. Your brain is what causes you to be an athlete. Your emotions, your spirit are a part of your body. They are in the inside of you. Everything is aligned or nothing is aligned. It's no different than eating right. It's no different than going to lift weights. You have to take care of your mentals. Thank you, Marshawn Lynch. Like, it's a very important thing. And I saw a lot of, you know, unfortunate Twitter gymnasts yesterday giving their thoughts on this. And the reality is two things. We've seen this with MMA fighters, too, where they've talked about they've gone in the ring and it's just gone. Right. Yeah. And that's a dangerous place to be, inside of an octagon with another human being or a boxing ring. And they're trying to hurt you and you don't have it anymore. If she's not mentally there and she's losing herself mid flip. Do you understand the repercussions of that? I'm sure you do, because we've seen it happen.
Yeah.
It's a very dangerous sport to not be 1,000% locked in on.
Of course.
Okay, now we can compare it to other sports and all of that as far as mentals and all everything that we just talked about, but let's keep it in context. It's dangerous for her to be competing if she is not 100% there mentally.
Yeah, it's also, I used to have a relationship, a former father-in-law. He just passed away this year. Wonderful, wonderful guy. And a member of his family needed therapy, and he saw it as a weakness. And I said, well, you're on heart medication. Are you a weak man?
Right.
Your body needs heart medication because of something you have inherited from your father. I said, mentally, people have lower serotonin levels. It's all the same. The idea that the brain isn't as important as the heart, isn't as important as the spine.
Like, isn't any different than an ankle injury.
It's just
a stigma, and it's honestly, it's archaic. Yeah. It really is.
Of course it is. Yes.
But both of us go to therapy. I am a big advocate of therapy.
Yeah, my kids go to therapy.
If you would go to physical therapy, if you busted your elbow, you would go to physical therapy, and no one would be like, oh, Colin, weak. You're gonna tough it out, that elbow. No!
My stepson just got an hour and a half massage yesterday because he went to the East Coast, played 7 games lacrosse, flew home, wasn't hydrated, and woke up and about fell down the stairs. You know, it's just, you got to work on your entire body.
I try to have nuanced conversations with people, and I obviously get frustrated because I am a very impatient person. But just think about the importance of that. And then as far as her being the GOAT, like, look, if she never showed up in Tokyo, she's still the greatest gymnast. Yeah. Male or female, she's the most decorated of all time. That's not my opinion. That's math. Just like we can't argue that Tom Brady is the most accomplished NFL player of all time. You can argue if you think Joe Montana is better or whoever you like. I think we all agree he's the GOAT. But it's not debatable he's the most accomplished. He has 7. That's numbers.
Yeah.
Go look at her medal count. She's the greatest gymnast of all time if she never even set foot in Tokyo. So Team USA bounced back from their Olympic opening loss with a huge blowout win over Iran, 120-66.
In your face, Iran, we dominated.
It was not the most poetic performance.
It's a
from
weird
Iran.
Team. We're too small, and listen, we got a lot of talent. There's no doubt we have tons of talent. But I swear to God, when you watch it, it's a different makeup. The construct of this team is weird.
It is different. This was a bit of a timeline cleanser for them. They needed this to, you know, get a little confidence back, and now they have Czech Republic on Saturday. Popovich did switch up the starters for this game. He had Devin Booker and Drew Holiday to help pick up the speed of the lineup. Damian Lillard also made 7 three-pointers for game-high 21 points. So they can punch their single elimination ticket to the quarterfinal round with a win over Czech Republic in the next game. I do think one important thing, I watched this whole game, I think one thing and that was an adjustment that they made as a team yesterday, not just Popovich, which I felt was a big problem for them in the last game, is that they were being a little too unselfish. Like, play how you guys normally play. You're very aggressive. You get your own shot. There's no egos on this team, obviously. So just go out there and win the game. And Durant said that we were a little bit too unselfish early on, a bit us. And tonight, guys came out as super aggressive. It may look bad when the shots don't go in, but we still had great intentions ever since we got together. So I thought that was a big team adjustment for them. So Trey Lance and the 49ers have finalized his rookie deal. He signed a 4-year, $34 million contract that is fully guaranteed. They got the deal done just in time for camp to open today. Kyle Shanahan said yesterday there is no open quarterback competition right now. Jimmy Garoppolo is the starter and Trey Lance is his backup. Zach Wilson is now the only unsigned first-round pick. I anticipate seeing Jimmy Garoppolo all season pending an injury.
Yeah.
I don't think that they're going to insert Trey Lance, but we'll see how he looks in preseason.
Well,
if he comes out looking great.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to get snaps. Like, it's not the Chicago situation where you doubt the competency of the starter. Garoppolo's
right.
More than competent. But they're going to – listen, you get drafted third and you're as athletic as that young man, you're going to get opportunities.
Well, he's the future of the organization. My question is, I feel like San Francisco wants to do right by Jimmy G. So do they move him at the trade deadline if someone needs him, if it's not a great situation, or do they play him through the entire season and wait – for a team that needs a quarterback but isn't going to get one high in the draft.
Yeah. It's good stuff. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line.
Oh, I bet
news.
Eric Mangini's chomping at the bit. He's got 3 rings with the Patriots, former 2-time NFL coach. Joining me, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. So I hear you think the Randall Cobb thing is okay, but I had two execs that said he's old, he's expensive, he can't play, it's washed, he was a Pro Bowl 7 years ago, he's a diminishing player. And to me, it feels like this is why players are players and executives are executive and coaches are coaches. You just drafted a slot kid whose comp was Randall Cobb. He cost you nothing. I think he was a third-round player. And I'm looking at the Packers, and I'm like, this is not a team up against – when you pay a quarterback $36 million a year, you're up against the cap. You can't be spending $7, $8, $9 million on Randall Cobb. Like, I don't like it at all, but you're okay with it.
But don't look at Randall Cobb in terms of what he's going to add to the team. Look at Randall Cobb in terms of what it did for Aaron Rodgers coming back into camp. That's what this is about. It wasn't that they looked at this and said, hey, we got to go get him back, because he's the difference between us winning the NFC Championship game and not. This was a throw-in, a concession for Aaron Rodgers. And the guy who won this whole Aaron Rodgers-Green Bay discussion or debate or conflict is Randall Cobb. He got the best situation of anybody in this. He gets to go play with Aaron Rodgers, and he gets his contract is taking care of it. It's great for him. It's fantastic for him.
Yeah, for Randall Cobb, it's wonderful. You bet.
Oh, it's the best.
Yeah, of course. I don't think
he won it.
Yeah. So when you look at the resolution with Aaron Rodgers, the new contract, what was your takeaway on it?
My takeaway on it is if it comes out that he's still under contract for next year, then this is a small W for Aaron Rodgers. Because as long as the Green Bay Packers still have control over his rights next year, then they win. They win. They get him back into camp. He plays all year. They guarantee what, his $12 million in salary? Who cares? He was going to get that no matter what. And now they still have control over him next season. They throw in a little Randall Cobb thing as a concession. And the Packers absolutely came out on top. And this is more of a face-saving thing for Aaron than anything else. He's in no different spot. They should make this, the second to last dance.
Yeah. So this move, I'm surprised it's not getting more publicity. I think Xavien Howard, there's an argument to be made. He's the best corner in the NFL. He led the NFL. He had 10 picks. That is, and by the way, that's a lot of picks in a division where New England and the Jets quarterback situation was unsettled. It's like those teams would prefer running the football. I think he's a generational talent. He's $15 million. If I was a general manager, who doesn't need another top corner? I mean, even if you had Jair Alexander for Green Bay, what do you do if you're Miami and a player this good, and I would imagine you think he's this good, wants out?
They can't move him. They absolutely cannot move him. This organization is in a totally different spot than they have been the last couple years. They've got to win, and this is their best player. The problem is when you've got Byron Jones setting the bar in terms of salary, and he's in the same film room watching the same plays over and over, and Byron Jones is giving up 108 quarterback rating on throws against him, 17, almost 18 yards per reception, and has four career interceptions in 6 years. I understand why he's mad. I get that. And it's insult to injury when you're in the room and watching it. And I promise you, there's a lot of things he's seen that we haven't seen on tape, which probably makes him that much angrier about his current situation. Now, that being said, I don't know if they're going to come to a resolution that he's absolutely happy with, but in terms of guaranteeing some more money for him or trying to do something from a Band-Aid perspective, I think Miami has to do that because they can't trade him. They can't do it at this point in this administration. Otherwise, this administration is not going to be around that much longer.
So Mike Sando comes out. He interviews executives, quarterbacks, coaches. It's very thorough. He puts four tiers of quarterbacks. An interesting part of this is that Tua with Miami is like middle to bottom of tier four. And the comments from executives are, I don't see it. He's not dynamic. When the pocket gets muddy, he diminishes quickly. Listen, they're going to ride and die with him this year. There's no getting around that. But what do you make of Tua? How long can Miami be patient?
Well, I'm first of all, I want to say I'm not saying that he is Tom Brady. But what I am saying is that Tom Brady, his rookie year, was not very good. And he developed a tremendous amount from year one to year two. And then even in year two, when he had an opportunity to play, we scored three offensive touchdowns in the playoff run and the Super Bowl. So it wasn't just Tom Brady who led that team to a championship. And he continued to improve year in and year out. So if you look at this player or any player and say after 1 year, your rookie year at the hardest position in the league, at a team that you could say was good offensively, had some good things offensively, but by no means was surrounded by dominant talent, that he can't continue to improve, I think that's wrong. And if there is any feeling in the organization that is the case, that they blew it, and they didn't try to rectify it this year when they had such high draft capital, then that's an even bigger mistake. They just compounded it. But we got to give him a chance.
Now, it's interesting, though. Brady did not grow up. Generationally, the game has changed. Tua had 10,000 snaps by the time he was 9 years old. Tua was in camps, quarterback coaching. Brady did not grow up in that environment. Drew Bledsoe always jokes. He's like, I had like 18 high school games. Now there's summer quarterback coaching. So my theory has been I judge quarterbacks differently today than 10 to 15 years ago. My demands are if you're 16 games in and I don't see it, I'm not going to give you the second, third, fourth year. And I've disagreed with Bill Polian on this. The world's changed. The quarterback coaching's better. If you get to Thanksgiving and you just don't see it, don't you have to, like, that's when meeting, like Daniel Jones, same thing. He grew up in this generation of quarterback camps, great coaching, 30,000 throws by the time he's 13 years old. Does that not, can't we quantify some of it that way?
Well, yes, to a degree. And look, Tua played at Alabama, which was the all-star team. It's hard to judge any quarterback that plays at that system because they're more talented than some NFL teams, and they're almost always more talented than everybody they play. So you've got a little bit of an asterisk there. In terms of pro football versus college football, it's a very different game, and it's very different than high school football, too. You're seeing multiples of blitzes, combination coverages, defensive packages. You're asked to do that many more things. And guys build reps at different paces. You wish that every guy came in and picked up things instantly and were good at things instantly. But there's different learning curves. And the demand is so much higher in the NFL than college football. You got to give them the benefit of the doubt, at least in my mind, 2 years and probably 2 years in a training camp.
All right. By the way, that quarterback tier thing. I by and large, we can put it up again. I by and large agreed with it.
Of course you did.
Well, I mean, I like Derek Carr more than most people. And I think Josh Allen should be at the bottom of tier one. I would put Derek Carr at the bottom of tier two. Those are the two guys. I think Derek Carr is the only thing saving Gruden and Mike Mayock right now. It's the one thing I do like about that team. What do you make of Josh Allen not in tier one?
Well, I think you also forgot Ben Roethlisberger should be in tier two, too. I know you don't love him at all.
I don't.
With Josh Allen, I like the things that he's done. I like the progress that he's made. I had real concerns about him coming out of college with his accuracy. And the guy was at 69% last year, so he's improved from the first two seasons. It's just hard for me to be sold that that's who he is. I think we got to see this year whether or not he can be consistent with that level of accuracy and can completion percentage. I'm not sure that he can. It's hard because you don't see a lot of quarterbacks consistently improve accuracy over time.
Yeah. No, he made a gigantic, unprecedented leap in accuracy. So I do get when people say, I mean, we just have never seen a guy go from 56 to 69%. Like, it just doesn't happen in the NFL.
Well, you know, Brian Daboll does a great job in Buffalo, and he's really smart. And it sounds like Josh is a great learner and a great worker from everything I've heard. And that, going back to our Tua conversation, seeing jumps like that, that's what encourages you about young players and young quarterbacks. Now, can he sustain it over time? That remains to be seen. But that level of progress is what gives the guys in Miami hope.
Yeah. Eric Mangini, good seeing you, Coach.
Good seeing you, Colin.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast.
You know, I've always said for athletes, they have a very short shelf life where they could make money and be stars. So I always support players who are looking to move on. Most great players would rather stay where they're at, but the owners, a buffoon, the GM's incompetent, the coach is lousy. So it's funny, Mike Sando comes out with his four tiers of quarterbacks. It's always very accurate. Two quarterbacks in tier one will be moved. Deshaun Watson and Aaron Rodgers will eventually be moved, which is amazing. In Deshaun Watson's case, long before his life unraveled, he was demanding a trade because he felt he was carrying an incompetent organization. He was right. Okay, they just butchered it, and that's why I defend Deshaun Watson. I defended him, wanting out. Houston was incompetent. It was giving players away. And then Aaron Rodgers, I've been harder on Aaron because I do think Green Bay is largely well-run. But let's go back to what started the discontent here. It was the 2020 draft. Let's be honest about this. Go back. That's why we're in this situation now, the 2020 draft. So Green Bay was 13-3, but it had been pushed around twice by the Niners and by the Chargers that ran all over them. So they needed a wide receiver. They needed a second wide receiver in a great wide receiver draft. They needed a corner. They needed a linebacker to get more physical. Brian Gutekunst butchered the draft. Now, GMs will tell you, the first four rounds, you should get starters. First round, you should get an elite starter. Second, third round, starters very soon, very good players. Round four, he's a starter within a year, but he projects as a starter. After that, there's a lot of finger crossing. I mean, half this league is undrafted guys. By the fifth round, you don't know what the hell you're getting. So the great players are gone by round four. That doesn't mean you don't get projects and guys get into systems and they work, but most of your Hall of Famers are in the first four rounds of the NFL draft, right? Here's the Packers 2020 draft. Remember, they were a very good team, close to the Super Bowl. They had needs. In the first round, they take a project at quarterback, Jordan Love. Now, people can say, well, when Favre was there, the Packers took Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers was not a project. He dropped to like 22nd. Many thought he should have been the number one pick. He dropped. Remember, the cameras were on him for like an hour and a half. Aaron was viewed as an elite prospect, not a project. Jordan Love, my people didn't like him. They thought he had real talent, but he was a total project. Top of the second. Late first, but don't move up to get him. The second round pick was a 6 foot, 250-pound power running back. They had two great running backs. Was not a position to need. Round three was a blocking tight end. One catch all year. And fourth round, they didn't have a pick. They gave it away to get Jordan Love. They butchered the draft. They didn't get a single special player, and they didn't fill any immediate needs. That's why we're here, by the way. Two of the quarterbacks in Tier 1 are going to get moved. It's the organization as well as the player. I know we all want to say Aaron's needy. They butchered the 2020 draft in Green Bay. Hour two next.